Good morning. And thank you all for coming to share this extraordinary Dharma together this morning. And especially welcome to our seminar participants. This amounts to day two of our introductory seminar on Zen Buddhism at the center here. Just a couple of things about a Teisho. Teisho is not a sermon or a talk in the usual sense. It's an attempt by the speaker to present the Dharma as clearly as possible in words. So, in listening to a Teisho, try to put aside judgments and opinions. Just let it wash through you, rather like the wind. During a Teisho, it's fine to shift your posture if you need to, but please do so quietly and unobtrusively, and however you sit, keep the back straight and the head up. Today we'll take a look at a koan. Koans are little Zen puzzles based mainly on the sayings and doings of the great Chan masters of ancient China. These people were able to express their understanding of reality in very direct and concrete ways that completely bypass the discursive mind. But we cannot think of their actions and words as illogical or just crazy talk or weird behavior. When one truly sees into a koan, it becomes perfectly logical. The difference being that one starts with a completely different set of assumptions, or rather, no assumptions whatever. So our task in working on these koans is to shed all our assumptions, notions, thoughts, opinions, and just see clearly what is right in front of us. The word koan is Japanese, but it comes from the Chinese kung'an, which means a public case, rather like a case in case law. Most of the incidents that are recorded did take place in public assemblies that included all the monks in a monastery and sometimes the general public as well. Today we'll work on a koan from the Wumen Quan, the first classical collection of koans that we study in our practice and training here for those who are working on koans. The Wumen Quan was compiled sometime in the 13th century by Master Wu Men. Each koan consists of a main case, a commentary by Wu Men, and also a verse by Wu Men. So here it is. Case number 16, the sound of the bell and the seven-piece robe. The case reads, Yun Men said, Look, this world is vast and wide. Why do you put on your seven-piece robe at the sound of the bell? And Wu Men's commentary. All you Zen students training in the way, it is urgent that you avoid pursuing sounds and clinging to forms. You may realize the way on hearing a sound or understand the mind on seeing a form. That's natural. But don't you know that true Zen students can ride sounds and enclose forms. They see everything clearly, moment by moment, and handle each and everything deftly, action after action. Even so, tell me, does the sound come to the ear, or does the ear go to the sound? Even if sound and silence are forgotten, what do you say at such a point? If you listen with your ear, you cannot realize it. If you hear with your eye, you are intimate at last. And Wu Men's verse. With realization, all things are one family. Without realization, all things are separate and different. With realization, all things are one family. Without realization, all things are separate and different. I think I had that backwards. Without realization, all things are one family. With realization, all things are separate and different. The case is more or less typical of Yun Men. Yun Men lived a few hundred years before Wu Men, the compiler of the Wu Men Quan. But his extraordinary dialogues and sayings are still studied and collected and examined for our own edification. He appears in more koans than perhaps any other of the Chinese masters. Wu Men's style was to throw out a question and then answer it himself. This time he throws out a question and doesn't even bother to answer. So who will answer? Who will climb onto his hook? Yun Men said, "Look, this world is vast and wide. Why do you put on your 7-piece robe at the sound of the bell?" The 7-piece robe, this is the kesa, comes from a Sanskrit word meaning kashaya, meaning colorless or neutral. It's worn by ordained Buddhist practitioners. It is said that one day the Buddha was walking with his attendant, Ananda, and seeing a rice field, the Buddha asked Ananda to design a robe patterned after the staggered rows of the rice field. Traditionally, the kesa is made of scraps of cloth that have been discarded, or perhaps found in a charnel ground. The saying is, burned by fire, munched by oxen, gnawed by mice, and worn by the dead. The pieces were stitched together to form that pattern of the rice fields. It was then dyed using roots, bark, or whatever plant material was available. In modern Buddhism, the kesas worn by some priests have become luxurious brocades whose pattern may tell you the rank of the priest. As lay ordinands, we wear the raksu. This is an abbreviated form of the kesa. It originated in China during the times when Buddhist monks were forced out of the monasteries and forbidden to wear the traditional robes. So they took to wearing a small version of the kesa secretly under their lay clothing. Today it's worn by many, many Buddhist lay practitioners who have taken jukai and been given Buddhist names. In our center, the raksu is given to those who enter the lay order of the Lotus and the Flame and commit to the practice of the way as the focus of their lives. It is sewn by the ordinand. We have some members here who are experts at putting them together, and they can help out. But if at all possible, the ordinand does the actual stitching as a meditation, chanting silently with each stitch, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. This world is vast and wide. Why do you put on your 7-piece robe at the sound of the bell? Yun Men was a monk speaking to other monks. But this question is not really about monks or robes, brown, blue, or black, or about a kesa or a raksu. Is it even about a bell? Is the koan mu about a dog? The world is vast and wide. It is not just vast and wide. It is infinite and eternal. All Buddhas throughout space and time, filling the countless worlds infinity beyond infinity. You yourself are the same. You are Buddha, vast, wide, infinite and eternal. Yes, the world is vast and wide. Yet here we are, enclosed by these 18-inch thick walls. We come in here at a particular time. We take off our outerwear, street clothes, put on our robes, those who are members. As the densho starts, we go up the stairs into the zendo, take our seats in the prescribed manner. The han is struck. then the clappers, and the small caisson. And we engage the practice. Why? The world is vast and wide. When the alarm clock goes off in the morning, we get up, shower, get dressed, eat, get ready to go to work. The world is vast and wide. The school bus is coming. We get the kids ready for school. Did you finish your homework? Do you have your lunch? The world is vast and wide. Boy, you know, I'd really love to, but Session starts next week, and I still have a lot of prepping to do, maybe sometime next month. The world is vast and wide. You are vast and wide. But how would you say that to a starving homeless person? To a drug addict desperate for the next fix? To a quadriplegic war veteran? To someone serving a 70-year sentence in Canyon City? What is it to be vast and wide beyond the world's dust? Why do you put on your 7-piece robe at the sound of the bell? Why do I get up when the alarm clock goes off? Why do I have to get to work? Well, maybe I have a family support. Will you keep working when the kids are gone? Why? There are mornings when we don't feel like going to work, or to the temple, or to school. So what do? We start to flog ourselves with reasons, with whys. If I don't get that report finished, I'm in deep doo-doo. If I'm late again, there goes the promotion. I remember a cartoon from years ago in a magazine. I think it was the New Yorker. It's early morning, and the man, having just woken up, is sitting on the edge of the bed, looking half asleep and totally miserable. His wife is standing in the doorway saying, "Of course you have something to live for. We need a new water heater. The roof needs fixing. The orthodontist bill just came." Oh, great. The world is vast and wide. Why are we here in our 7-piece robes or our 5-piece outfits or whatever doing zazen? To get enlightenment? To relieve stress, to attain happiness, to gain occult powers, learn to levitate? Or is it just a quiet place where I can be quiet for a bit just to see what happens? I practice zazen to get enlightenment. Well, I don't seem to be getting enlightened, so maybe I'm doing this for happiness. Well, I'm still not very happy, so maybe I'm doing it for whatever. I'm doing it for this, that, and the other. Reasons, causes, excuses are myriad and also temporary. Whatever reasons you have or think you have to take up this practice, to get up in the morning or not get up, to go to work or not go to work, they change and they change. Reasons, causes, effects are all reflections on water. Here's a poem by a 17th century English philosopher named Henry Aldrich. If on my theme I rightly think, there are 5 reasons why men drink. Good wine, a friend, or being dry, or lest we should be, by and by, or any other reason why. We can always come up with reasons. I am this because of that. I do this in order that that may be. I do that in order to prevent something else. Robert Heinlein wrote, "Man is not a rational animal. Man is a rationalizing animal." We rationalize. We don't want to take full responsibility for our situation, especially if we don't happen to like it. I had a rotten childhood. My wife left me. I lost my job. Sounds very country western. Therefore, I drink, mistreat my kids, act generally like a jerk. How quickly a reason, a why, becomes an excuse, an escape. But in all that rationalizing, there's always the assumption of a bottom line, unexpected result, a known outcome. But there are no known outcomes. The future is utterly unknowable. To commit to a marriage, a spiritual practice, a job, to having children, is to commit to the unknown. No matter how virtuous the life we lead or practice, if we attach to reasons around that life or that practice, we are caught up in the wheel of cause and effect. Cause and effect is an activity, an attachment of the rational mind. And yet, cause and effect is a fundamental teaching of the Buddha. But it is also just another term for samsara, the endless wheel of life, suffering, old age, death, rebirth. As long as we chase after things, driven by all those whys, we are trapped on the wheel. And what does all that rationalization have in common? They are all about a separate universe doing something good or bad to the separate me. Therefore, I do something good or bad to it. Cause and effect is the Buddha's teaching, but not if it's looked upon in this way. It is not about trying to reconstruct a chain of events, either in retrospect or as a prediction. Why is not inevitable? Why do I scratch my nose? It itches. But if I'm doing zazen at a formal sitting, my nose may itch, and I don't scratch it. It just itches. That old saw about when I'm hungry, I eat, when I'm tired, I rest, doesn't necessarily apply. There are times when I'm hungry, I don't eat, I'm just hungry. I'm tired, and I don't rest, I'm just tired. I am free to eat or not to eat, to rest or not to rest. You are free to put on your robe or not put on your robe. So where then is this why? It is only with realization of the true nature of why that the world becomes vast and wide. This realization is not comfortable. The reasons, the why, give us a kind of security. But that security comes at a cost. The cost is to remain in bondage. Dado Lori said, "The law of karma says that what you do and what happens to you are one and the same thing. Cause and effect are the same. They are the same in this moment. That is the only way they can be the same." The Buddha said, "We are what we think. With our thoughts, we make the world." I wish he had said, "We are what we think in this moment. With our thoughts, we make the world in this moment." Always in this moment. It is in this moment that cause, effect, the bell, and the robe are not separate. Then to the gate, to the oneness of cause and effect is thrown open, says Hakuin. As soon as we leave this moment, we have lost it, and we are again trapped in the wheel. But now that you are vast, wide, infinite, and eternal, why do you put on your 7-piece robe at the sound of the bell? Yun Min's question will free us. It is here that we touch the great mystery, and we realize that it is only because the world is vast and wide that you can put on your seven-piece robe at the sound of the bell. Wu Men's commentary. All you Zen students training in the way, it is urgent that you avoid pursuing sounds and clinging to forms. You may realize the way on hearing a sound, or understand the mind on seeing a form. That's natural. But don't you know that true Zen students can ride sounds and enclose forms? They see everything clearly, moment by moment, and handle each and everything deftly, action after action. But even so, tell me, does the sound come to the ear, or does the ear go to the sound? Even if sound and silence are both forgotten, what do you say at such a point? If you listen with your ear, you cannot realize it. If you hear with your eye, you are intimate at last. Yes, it is urgent that you avoid pursuing sounds and clinging to forms. That wheel of samsara, the endless round of birth, death, and rebirth, depends absolutely on our pursuit of sounds and clinging to forms. When we let go of these, we let go of everything. Then and only then can we realize the way on hearing a sound, hearing a rock striking bamboo, hearing a train whistle, a bell, seeing peach blossoms, a pile of rocks, or maybe even a piece of dog poop. Dogen said, when the 10,000 things advance and confirm the self, that is enlightenment. True Zen students see everything clearly, moment by moment, and handle each and everything deftly, action after action. This is not about living a perfect life as we normally think of it. Indeed, we strive to see everything clearly, including our own mistakes and foibles. But who is it that truly sees everything clearly and handles each and everything deftly? A tree handles leaves deftly. A stream handles water deftly. If you listen with your ear, you cannot realize it. If you hear with your eye, you're intimate at last. Hear with the eye. What eye is that? Where did that sound come from? Here, there, where? By what route did it enter? Where did it go? Where is it now? How will you hear it? Wu Men's verse. With realization, all things are of one family. Without realization, all things are separate and different. Without realization, all things are one family. With realization, all things are separate and different. With realization, without realization, separate, different, all one family. If you say that everything is separate and different, when the jiki strikes the densho, the big temple bell, is the sound of the bell separate from the bell itself or not? Is the mallet that strikes the bell separate from the jiki or not? Is the sound of the bell separate from the mallet, the bell, jiki, or you, or anything in the universe? Is your putting on the robe separate from the robe, or from the sound of the bell, or from the universe? If you say that all things are of one family, can you wear the bell like you wear your robe? Can you strike the bell with the bell? Do you put on your robe, or does your robe put on you? You can't get stuck anywhere. Not in all things are one family. Not in all things are separate and distinct. So then, where does the vast, wide world meet the sound of the bell and the seven-piece robe? Together with all beings, we realize the way.